segment of the Grassy Knoll on this August 3rd, 2006. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We have with us today Israeli journalist Barry Chamish. He's also an author, and some of you may be very familiar with certain titles, such as Israel Betrayed, The Last Days of Israel, Who Murdered Yitzhak Rabin, which is now a video, and his website is barrychamish.com. We'll get into a lot more about that in a little bit. But first, we want to welcome you back. It's been a while, Barry. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I guess you got me at the right time. By the way, I have a new website. It's called The Barry Chamish Website. And if you go into that, you can see me as a human being. There's pictures and stuff. So I'm going to plug that. It's only 2 days old. The Barry Chamish Website. I have people in America actually helping me, and someone put it up for me.
And would that be .com?
Oh, of course, www.thebarrychamishwebsite.com.
All right, now, the last time we spoke to you was on a notable day, and you went ahead and you congratulated the Pittsburgh Steelers on winning the National Football League Championship, and of course through the Super Bowl, and that was all well and good, but we just thought it was pretty interesting because the game had yet to be played.
I knew it was going to happen, but I wish the refing wasn't so dreadful. They will still ask questions about being on the Pittsburgh 1 yard line and ask if penalty is being called. But yes, they won. They deserved it.
Well, Harry always refers to the way those things happen with the referees. He calls them the entertainment committee takes care of that.
Oh, but if I was in Seattle, I'd be really upset. On the 1 yard line, the game was being turned, and then a series of asinine calls. We don't want that in our Super Bowl. How come the refs are such amateurs in the NFL?
That's another conspiracy we have to get into sometime.
My goodness.
All right, and of course you're going to give us those preseason prognostications, right? Because
Minnesota is not going to the Super Bowl.
Okay. All right.
You heard it first from that.
Okay.
Right here, Minnesota is not going to make it.
All right, now, that's probably the lightest note we'll touch upon in not only this interview, but the next, unfortunately. But let's talk about yourself. Since we spoke to you at the beginning of the year, you've gone through your own travails, haven't you?
Look, something very wrong happened in Israel to me. Now, it began when my pretty girlfriend got followed. Everywhere she went, these thugs would get on the bus with her, get in a store with her. They went to her neighbors asking about me and her relationship with me until she couldn't take it anymore and busted us up. And this was followed by a stroke. I had a stroke. Again, I keep saying this, maybe it was a conspiracy. Maybe at 53 it deserved a stroke. But then I get out of the hospital and I'm hit with a head-on car crash. I'm telling you, I didn't see the lights. They were that fast. But I know this, the police aren't letting my insurance company see the car. They're not letting my lawyer see the car. Nobody is allowed to investigate this accident for some reason. And I got to tell you, I was almost dead in the hospital. 3 times they revived me. My lungs had collapsed, and they had to revive me. And unfortunately, friends of mine, my sister and a close couple that I know that watched me being revived, they were all in shock. They were inconsolable by what they had seen. I didn't see it because I was unconscious. But I managed to get out of that. And when I was in the hospital, I said, I'm getting out of here. There's too much going on. And it's just not just that. I'm in and out of court. Stupid court cases that could cost me everything plus what I've ever built up. And it isn't much now because I just got on a plane and I ended up in middle America. And I said, this country is, well, for some reason, is after me. You know, I didn't know why. But I suspect it's because I spoke about the very obvious murder of Sharon.
Well, two things. One, can you consider yourself fortunate that being in the hospital, which is usually the place where a lot of, quote, accidents occur, do you feel fortunate that you weren't terminated there?
My Lord, was it a dreadful experience, though. I won't tell you how often I was restrained and stuff. It was a terrible experience. But yeah, I came out of it. Nonetheless, My country is being destroyed. It's being destroyed exactly the way I said it would be destroyed. And I don't know how many times. Listen to last show. You will hear me say that Israel has 18,000 rockets aimed at it from the southern Lebanon, and it won't be able to survive. The entire Galilee is going to go up in flames. If you listen to last show, you will hear me say that. I've been saying that for the last 4 years. They're going to dump thousands upon thousands of rockets on Israel, and the place is going to be uninhabitable. And the big one, of course, was when Barack, and we'll talk about Barack if you want.
Sure.
He's an awfully dirty creep, entirely controlled by the Council on Foreign Relations in New York, and that is, by the way, no guesswork. It's proven. Pulled out of Lebanon. We didn't have the Hezbollah on our border for 18 years. We had a 35-mile buffer zone defended by an army that were truly friends of Israel, the South Lebanese Army. Barack one night pulls out of southern Lebanon, leaves millions upon millions of dollars of equipment and codes and computers in Lebanon, but worse than anything else, he abandons our allies. The South Lebanese army were left all by themselves, and anyone who belonged to that army was arrested the next day. He was tortured. He was mutilated. He was jailed or he was killed. And once again, that's what we do to our allies. No wonder we don't have any in Lebanon today. We made sure that they ended up in the Lebanese jails. And then, of course, the Hezbollah moved in. There was no Hezbollah on our border. We were safe from Hezbollah. Now, you got to ask yourself, Hezbollah aren't Palestinian. What exactly are they fighting Israel for? There's nothing left of them to fight. This stupid Sheba farm is 100 square miles of Syrian territory. It's none of their business. What are they doing it for? And it has nothing whatsoever to do with the Palestinian cause. It has a great deal to do with the Iranian cause. And we will just say that this is not a war between Israel and Hezbollah. This is the New World Order versus Iran. That's what this war is. And by the way, Iran is also fronting for China. So it gets even bigger if you really want to go back. But we'll leave it at that the forces that are the New World Order. Now, right down in the Middle East, it's mostly the American faction. That is, in London, it's the Royal Institute of International Affairs. In New York, it's the Council of Foreign Relations. These are their diplomatic headquarters. But that is not to say that the armies in Iraq or the armies in Afghanistan all come from these places. But diplomatically, they do. You do have a president, and you do have a Congress who are mostly from the CFR. But nonetheless, what you call the neocons, I call the CFR.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
This is what I don't understand. How come when the word neocon is mentioned, the CFR isn't? They're all members of the CFR. The only one who isn't that I can see is Rumsfeld.
Yeah, correct. I mean, we have the rosters up, and I know you were obtaining them as well. You can find out, you know, all your friendly politicians, both Republican and Democrat, are on the CFR.
Okay, now why do they sing neocon? All day long you hear the neocons are doing this to us. Say the CFR already. Okay, I don't understand. You know the name of the building. Why isn't there a demonstration outside? I believe it's on East 68th Street in Manhattan. Why isn't there a demonstration against this grotesque organization? If you have to have a bunch of people in New York protesting the Iraqi war, and that's extremely rare, by the way. You're lucky you don't have a draft. It would be Vietnam again.
Well, give it time. But, you know, the other thing, too, Barry, and, I mean, you might have asked a rhetorical question, but most Americans have no idea what the CFR does. You had Rush Limbaugh years ago denying the existence of it. You'll see every so often somebody on the nightly news who has a curtain behind him which says, you know, Council on Foreign Relations, but people do not get it. If you were to say that they're running a show, everybody would be would tell you, well, you're a conspiracy theorist. So the thing is,
remember, Dick Cheney, Paul Wolfowitz, James Wolfenson, they're some neocons. Throw them out. I'll tell you if they're members or not.
Well, my point is this. The neocons are tangible. They exist. All Americans get the fact that that's what's out there. So they can live with that information they're allowed to know. But that's so that they don't go behind the curtain and check out the CFR.
Well, as I said, any member of this organization, and I don't even know if it's so organized. I read about meetings that took place, and I've read about Leo Strauss, and I've read about the theory of who a neocon is.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact remains is policy of the Council on Foreign Relations. And that, by the way, again, there's no coincidence. There are no coincidences in this life.
In this world, right?
If every one of them, but Rumsfeld, and I don't know why he's not a member, they should draft him already. If every one of them are from the CFR, then this is a CFR operation finished. Okay? And again, we're going to look at the... I don't know if we have time. We have 2 hours. But I think we should look at what happened to the Jews when a certain Shabtai Tzvi was declared himself a messiah of the Jews on June 18th of 1666. That is not as dumb a date as you may think, even though it's rubbed out of Jewish history. The CFR, this is a beauty. Oh, is this a beauty. They are run by people who believe that there was a Messiah in 1666 by the name of Shabtai Tzvi. Now, the reason I say this is because proof is coming out in very, very strange ways. Now, Shabtai Tzvi wasn't the Messiah of most Jews for very long because the Sultan of Turkey made him convert to Islam under tremendous duress. And most of the Jews abandoned him, but not all. There was a cult in Turkey called the Donma who believed he converted because that was a secret message that we all must convert and join other religions while practicing Sabbateanism on weekends. Now, Sabbateanism hates Judaism. Okay? All its heart and soul, these people despise the Torah. And in fact, their tenets say the Torah is right in its opposite sense. In other words, you take the Ten Commandments as one example of a long book, but do not kill becomes kill. Kill is great. It's a mitzvah if you kill. And Rabbi Antelman, the great Marvin Antelman, by the way, who is now 78 years old, did a marvelous interview on something called IsraelNationalRadio.com. Look up the Tamar Yonah show. She is the only DJ in Israel talking about the New World Order, and she's getting very, very good at it.
Who's this again? I'm sorry?
Tamar Yonah on IsraelNationalRadio.com. She had Marvin Antelman on the show about a month and a half ago. He was magnificent explaining how powerful these Sabbateans are. He wrote a great book called To Eliminate the Opiate back in 1974. No one, 30 years later, nobody knows what he's talking about. But I discovered he was right. And I kind of rewrote his greatest points of that book so that people could understand them. That's my book, Shabtai Tzvi, Labor Zionism, and the Holocaust, which I sent to you last time I was in America, and I think you understand what I'm saying in that book. I'm saying that the CFR... Okay, let's take an example. Enough times, the CFR appoint someone to high office, and some reporter looks up their past, lo and behold, John Kerry's father is a Jew. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, who doesn't know what their father is?
Apparently, Matt...
Who doesn't know what their father is?
Madeleine Albright doesn't know either.
Madeleine Albright doesn't know her whole family's Jewish? Wesley Clark has to wait till he's, I don't know how old, and bombing the hell out of Bosnia before he discovers that he's a Jew? You have to look at these people and ask why they don't know what their own families are. And you're going to find a whole lot of these Sabbateans who converted to other religions and have to keep it a secret that they believe in something extremely not Jewish. These people aren't Jews. Don't ever mix these Sabbateans, or by the way, Frankists. Now, why are they called Frankists as well? Because in 1785 in Frankfurt, Germany... By the way, Frankfurt is the capital of conspiracy in this world. Just so you know that it's managed not to get that reputation, but at the home of Mayor Ansel Rothschild, there was a meeting held, and the honored guests were Adam Weishaupt, who of course is the Jesuit founder of the Illuminati, and Jacob Frank, the head of the European Sabbateans, and many, many people now call them Frankists because the European branch believed that Jacob Frank was the second Messiah. So you can call them Sabbateans or you can call them Frankists, but these people plotted. Well, first of all, Rothschild just wanted money, and he got the greatest plotters in the whole wide world sitting in his living room. Now, Adam Weishaupt, the Illuminati, of course, want to eliminate the Protestant Reformation. This is their goal, is to destroy those societies that abandoned the Pope. And you destroy them, of course, by wrecking the institutions that made them great. The family, patriotism, royalty, whatever makes these societies great went down the tubes. And the Illuminati were discovered during the French Revolution, the story about the horseman who fell, delivering a message to the revolutionaries, and inside were the plans of the Illuminati. That's the story we're told, nonetheless. And they were banned. They were banned first in Bavaria, then all through Europe. So they made a decision, a very good one in their case. They would infiltrate an established organization and over time change their tenets to the tenets of the Illuminati. The institution they discovered was, lo and behold, British Freemasonry. There's a lot of theories that they approached the Knights Templar in Scotland, who ran the Scots Rites of Freemasonry movement of the world, and convinced them to include the Illuminati as part of the tenet. There are all kinds of theories, but one thing is for sure: after about 1790, the Masons became extremely conspiratorial. Suddenly, there were conspiracies about them throughout the world where previously there wasn't. So something extremely drastic happened to British Freemasonry around 1790. And that something drastic was the Illuminati infiltrating them. And from there, the whole world changed. The movements of the world, the great political movements, took a trip from Germany, where they were founded, but London, where they were hatched. Communism, of course, is classic. Here are your Sabbateans, Marx and Engels. What Marx wasn't a Jew. He came from a long line of rabbis, but he converted because that's what Sabbateans do. So did Engels, and the Jesuits took communism to South America, and they put all the Indians there in communes. Later on, of course, that was transferred to Russia, where the Jesuits provided, once again, the Cossacks to harm the Jews in every way possible, and the Sabbateans provided the communists. All of this, believe it or not, and it's, you really have to read, start with my book, and there's a lot more out there. This has been harming the world endlessly. Now we're talking about a war in Lebanon, and I'm trying to tell you folks, it's a CFR war. It's a war hatched by the CFR. It began with the Oslo War Agreement in 1992, November of 1992. Now if you want, and just ask me and I'll tell you about the time I got some amazing information from inside Oslo. I interviewed Ron Pundak for 2 hours at a Tel Aviv cafe. He was one of the two negotiators of the Oslo Agreement. Just tell me when and I'll tell you how to...
Oh, no, because, well, on your website you state this as the war that was guaranteed by the Oslo Accord, so let's go there.
It was. It's a war I've been screaming about for 13 years, and as for the missiles, I've been screaming about that for the last four.
Okay, yeah, let's do it, because, you know, well, one of the things I'm thinking about as you're talking, Barry, and if you want to address this first, fine, if not, we'll do it later. I mean, you understand the way the world goes around. You understand that there's a desire for a one-world government. So what I can ask you then is that this war, whatever is taking place in the Middle East, has been contrived, it's been planned, it was not spontaneous. Would you agree with that?
Oh, of course. I mean, you're talking about my work. My work of the last dozen years has been saying that this war would take place. Israel's going to lose, you know that, don't you?
Well, you know, a lot of people over here who are pro-Israel backers figure that the reason they want to get into this is to make sure Israel sticks around. So you have a very different... Well, you're here now. You're in the States.
Israel sticks around?
Well, I mean...
Israel doesn't stick around.
Well, what they're looking at is the end-time scenarios in Ezekiel and Revelation and the fact that...
We lose two-thirds of our people?
Well, that would be global, too, wouldn't it?
No, that would be Israel. You're supposed to lose two-thirds of the Jews, and if you really want to go all the way, all the saints go to heaven for 1,000 years, and then they all come back as into the real New World Order in 1,000 years' time, into the New Jerusalem. Look, this is really not the way I think, I assure you. But, you know, people who believe that, I'll come to your church and I'll give you the actual facts about who's bringing Israel down, and you're just going to have to get it from a Jew, and if that doesn't bother you, I'll tell you what is actually happening in Israel. I'll give you a phone number right now to do that. It's 918-482-2333, 918-482-2333, or email me at chamishba@gmail.com, chamishba@gmail.com, and book me. It's very simple. What I've been saying for 12 years is that Israel has been completely taken over by the Council on Foreign Relations, but Israel itself was not founded by Jews. They were founded by Sabbateans. Israel was not founded to be a sanctuary for the Jews. Israel was founded to be the end of the Jews. And this is what can I tell you? I mean, I'm banned by American Jews. I can't get into the synagogue. You should see what has been done to me this year to destroy my reputation. But once again, we have a war going on that I've been screaming about and trying to prevent with all my heart and soul. My family and my friends live there. My whole life has been put into that country. And it is now run by people who don't care how many Jews are killed. And now if you want to talk about another Holocaust, I'll be glad to.
Well, what I'm saying is fathom what's going on around you in the United States, and you'll see a very different idea about what's going on over there and why it's going on there. In fact, finally, NBC Nightly News went ahead and did stuff on it, and about this guy Hagee, who's in a state just below where you are right now, who thinks this is all well and great, and this is the beginning of the rapture, blah, blah, blah. So,
I'm afraid you're right. I'm afraid he thinks it's wonderful. Hagee is a pastor who thinks Benjamin Netanyahu is a great politician. I've only, since 1997 is when the book Traitors and Carpetbaggers in the Holy Land came out, and I did a chapter on how Benjamin Netanyahu, as a student in Boston, age 24, was completely taken over by the Council of Foreign Relations. He was taken over by Richard Pearl, George Shultz, and George Bush the Senior. I'll be glad to do that right now. I'm just asking you, wherever you take me, I'll go. If you want Netanyahu and John Hagee's close ties to Netanyahu, I'll do it right now. Just say the word.
Well, let's see. We plan to go in a couple of directions, but let me just ask you this.
I'm waiting for you to go ahead on any subject you want. I can prove to you that Netanyahu was totally tied up with George Shultz and Richard Pearl, is to this day, and is the biggest phony that Israel's got because he's the best actor.
Let me ask you this now, and this is by way of part of an email I got, and I think we'll address the other part of this email on Monday. But now, you're saying, all right, the Sabbateans, of which I'm aware, and of course you do go into some depth on the website about that, so people can go there and and educate themselves. But most of us will call it Zionism. Out of Britain.
Call it labor Zionism, and then he would be right. There was another Zionism, a very great Zionism, in the 30s that all the history books will tell you was fascistic. And by the way, if I ever make a history book, I'm going to end up being a fascist too. That's what they do. They change people's reputation. Look, the revisionist Zionists led by Zev Jabotinsky were trying to stop the Holocaust. With all their hearts and souls, they had an organization in the United States led by Hillel Cook, Peter Cook. He was doing what he could, but there was no chance because the Jewish Agency of Jerusalem had cut terrible deals with the Nazis. Terrible things. The worst, there's a book called, by Edwin Black. It's called The Transfer Agreement.
Right.
Read it. You will find that the Jewish Agency had cut a deal to get the Jews of Germany to Palestine, and then, of course, Palestine's borders would be blocked, and all the Jews would be left for the Nazis to do whatever they wanted. And I got some sad news for people who are labor Zionists. The worst of the lot was Chaim Weizmann, who became, of course, a hero of Israel, the first president. Weizmann said that Hitler did too good a job. They had expected 2 million to survive, and really blew it that only 100,000 Jews in all of Europe survived. They expected the strongest to survive the Holocaust and come to Palestine. Well, they had to go and get the Arab Jews to Sephardim because of that, and that's a different story. But the fact remains that in the United States, the Roosevelt government was blocked by the Sabbateans in their government, like Felix Frankfurter, who had a picture of Shabtai Tzvi in his office. But the worst of the lot was Rabbi Stuart Weiss. He was head of the Reform Movement. He did everything in his power to make sure that Roosevelt, who knew all about the Holocaust, did nothing, not diplomatically, not militarily, to stop it. They wanted the Jews to be killed. They didn't believe in Shabtai Tzvi or Jacob Frank. They wanted them to go, and the new Judaism was going to rise. The Judaism of Israel, which was non-religious, which loves wife swapping. I mean, it says do not adulter in the Ten Commandments, so you adultered. Okay? What you had in Israel, at least the original intention, was a Judaism that had nothing to do with the Jewish religion. All the tenets of Judaism were going to be turned on their head. You would eat pork on Yom Kippur. This is, and by the way, what I just said is a terrible sin, in case you didn't catch why I meant that. That's what Israel was formed to be, the new Sabbatean state. Now, I have quite a history of that. I call it the German devils. The Deutsch devils, where Germany is used to create Israel. I got news for you. The original Zionists wanted the German Jews. They wanted the light-haired and blue-eyed and the whole routine. They were every bit as racist as the Nazis. Every bit. But the Jewish people didn't fall for it. It's that simple. The Jewish people ousted these people. In 1977, Begin became prime minister. Now, again, you look at the history books and you got Begin as some sort of fascist. Begin was the most honorable man who ever became prime minister of Israel. And you've got to reread your history. Look, every year there's a poll in Israel, who was your favorite prime minister? Every year Begin wins by 2-1. He was the only true blue patriot who ever served as prime minister of Israel. Now, Begin went into Lebanon too. The difference is Begin won. That's the difference. We had a surprise attack. I was in that attack, by the way. In case you don't know, I was a soldier. I entered Lebanon on the first day of the war, June 6, 1982. And I was on the Beirut-Damascus highway by nightfall. We had taken all of Lebanon in a day. All of it. The whole place. What's going on right now is not an attempt to win. It's an attempt to kill Jews, to make the Jews so worn out they will accept foreign troops in their country. They'll accept anything. When this war is over, they will accept anything. Now, if you want to talk about the foreign troops and Condoleezza Rice's meeting in Rome, we will talk about the other side of the New World Order, the Vatican.
Well, I'll tell you what, before we go any further, and I want to bring you back to Oslo's impact on what's happening today. But before we go any further,
it created this war.
But Barry, why don't you go ahead and tell folks about the two websites, the books that are available, the video that's out there, and anything new that might be coming down the road.
New, as I said, I'm in America. I can't even write properly. You don't have a website. You don't have an internet server that will send my list. My list is about 3,000 names. I've divided it up about 50 different ways. I can't get a web server that will send out what I used to write. So I'm I'm now not a writer. I'm writing short little pieces so I can send as many of my readers my views and not spend a week sending them out individually. I don't know why America's communications are so primitive, but they are. Hello?
All right, I'm still here.
Okay. Now, as for getting a hold of me and ordering the books, just write ShamishBA at gmail.com. Or, now, this phone number is only for booking, supposedly. But if you want a book, they include Traders and Carpenters in the Holy Land, Who Were These Hakrabin, Save Israel, Israel Betrayed, The Last Days of Israel, and the new book, Shabtai Tzvi, Labor Zionism of the Holocaust. And believe it or not, you may not have to get another chance to order them. My ex-wife was handling the books that I had printed in Israel. She left the country with my children and my nephew for England. I don't know if she's going to go back. I'm going to run out of books really soon. But you may phone me 918-482-2333 for, you know, like a couple of hours after this show. But the email is the best way. And there, you got it. Look at a new website called the BarryChamishWebsite.com, and that will give you an idea. But again, everything I have ever said, for the last 13 years, unfortunately, it has all come true this year, and now we look at the Vatican. And this is extremely important, because the Deputy Prime Minister of Israel, Shimon Peres, is a spy for the Vatican. And the Vatican, believe me, this year, have been extremely busy in Israel. The first thing that, oh, by the way, never forget this. Shimon Peres murdered Ariel Sharon with his buddy, Yoram Reuven, the bodyguard. And by the way, they murdered Yitzhak Rabin. And when Reuven was named Ariel Sharon's new bodyguard, this was about 6-7 months ago, I just announced to the world, Sharon is dead. And it's not going to take very long. They're going to kill Sharon. And the people that killed Sharon were not just Peres. Peres works with the Vatican. Now, I'm going to give you a name. It won't mean much to you. And I only found out about this 2 days ago when finally a contact from Israel phoned me. And she is letting her name be known. Her name is Kathy Cohen. She's one of the rare people who is proud of her work. She traced the Sharon murder to the apostolic nuncio of Jerusalem. His name was Pietro Sambi. He left for Washington to be the apostolic nuncio of Washington on December 17th. That is one day before Shimon Peres had a private meeting with Sharon in the Knesset, where we are told they drank tea. By the way, never drink tea with Peres. Because half an hour later, you're going to be brought into Hadassah Hospital by the bodyguard Yoram Reuven. The same gang knocked off Sharon. Now, I could go through the whole murder step by step, stage by stage. The doctors who tended Sharon went on TV 2 months ago on a show called Uda and admitted they gave him medicine that poisoned him. They gave him something called Kixane, a blood thinner, which was poison because they discovered him and withheld from the Israeli public that Sharon had weak blood muscles. He had something called CAA. The muscles in his brain, the blood vessels in his brain were extremely weak. They gave him something that would cause a cerebral hemorrhage, and it did. This was the murder of Sharon, and believe it or not, it all led up to this war, because Sharon didn't want this war, apparently. But Olmert and Peres, the Vatican spy, were crazy about anything the Vatican wanted. Now, keep something in mind when it comes to the United States working with the Vatican, when it comes to the CFR working with the Illuminati. One of the big, big... Hello?
Yeah, we're here.
One of the big helpers... by the way, that's somebody tried to call in, and it's very irritating. One of the big helpers of Olmert was Daniel Abraham. Daniel Abraham, of the CFR, Now, this is going to be confusing. First, I'll tell you the scandal that never was. We discovered that he bought Olmert's house from Olmert for 2.5 times its value during the election campaign. He gave Olmert a couple $1 million free of charge, and that was supposed to be a giant scandal, but lo and behold, it disappeared. Now, I was in Salt Lake City 3 weeks ago talking about another murder, again, by the Perez gang, led by Daniel Abraham. Well, it was Wayne Owens, the congressman from Utah, and he was murdered by, let's put it this way, his business partner was Daniel Abraham of the Council on Foreign Relations, and he is one nasty, nasty son of a bitch. And right now what he's doing is he's changing the point of view of all the future Orthodox rabbis of America. He's the one who gives $10 million a year to Yeshiva University for the Foreign Affairs Department. And there's a guy there who's now running Yeshiva University. His name is Joel. He hosted the Vatican and Israel's greatest rabbis, the greatest rabbis of Judaism. He hosted a conference not a year ago at the Yeshiva University, supposedly for peace. I'm telling you, it was what the purpose was. The Vatican wanted Jerusalem. Now, do I or do I not tell you the story of how Shimon Peres promised the Vatican all of East Jerusalem during the negotiations for the Oslo Accord? It's a bit long. You tell me if I do it or not.
Well, I tell you what. Honestly, I'd like to hold that tip for the second show.
Fair enough. Nonetheless, the amount of information I've collected,
mm-hmm.
and by the way, this one is solid beyond a shadow of a doubt. I thoroughly proved that Paris offered the Vatican Jerusalem as part of the Oslo Accords. There was a cockamamie deal where the Vatican would get the holy sites and they get an enclave. They would get East Jerusalem. They would give the PLO a capital in their enclave. There are a lot of secret clauses of Oslo. The real stuff is in the secret clauses. Although, let me tell you, it's bad enough what they told us. The real stuff is in the secret clauses, and there were two very, very important ones. One, the PLO get a state in Jerusalem. The Vatican gives it to them. Two, the settlers are murdered. They are removed from the West Bank and Gaza, and anyone who can promote resistance, who can get these people to fight back, is killed. And in the words of the secret accords of the Vatican, they are eliminated. It says to eliminate the religious and political leaders of the West Bank and Gaza. They actually sign that. Now, again, I have a few CDs. One of my CDs is called The Secret War Against the Settlers. The other one that I have in this country, of course, what can I say, is the Vatican's new campaign for Jerusalem. All of it is directly connected with Israel losing this war. Israel was not supposed to win this war. And Paris and Olmert could care less how many Jews are killed in this war. It's another thing American Jews don't understand. They hate the Jews.
Well, before we go any further, folks, if you want to ask a question or make a comment, you can do so by sending an email to visigoth@hotmail.com. If you're going to use instant messaging, you got Yahoo. That would be Viz1400. And if it's MSN, it is a Visigoth. Barry, again, can we lay out the structure, though, of what happened in Oslo? Or are you pretty much done with that?
No, you offered quite... Look... okay, get ready, okay?
Yep.
I got to do one of these stories. I didn't waste my life. I'll prove it. I interviewed Ron Pundak. Now, I tell this story because it's the deepest in the Oslo I ever went to. It's a lot deeper than the traditional media, which seems to think this is a peace treaty, ever went.
Mm-hmm.
I went there with my partner at the time, Joel Bainerman. We met him at a Tel Aviv cafe, and he thought we were sympathetic. And why not? You know, we're secular Jews, and he thinks that all secular Jews loved Oslo. which is far from the truth, but this is not a very bright man. I assure you, he's a very stupid man, in fact. But neither here nor there, he told us all kinds of things, like Paris had nothing to do with Arthur, that Balin the Rabine hid it from Paris, all kinds of stuff that I've written in my books. That's why Paris brought the Vatican when he finally discovered it, but neither here nor there, he told us, my boss, his boss is Yossi Balin, okay? Says, my boss doesn't believe in borders. And I never heard that concept. In December of 1993, I didn't know what that meant. And I asked him, what do you mean he doesn't believe in borders? He says, borders cause wars.
Yeah.
If you get rid of borders, there'll be no more wars. And I started thinking, well, what does that mean? I still didn't know. Now I know. And he says, by the end of Oslo, Israel is not going to have any borders. And I thought to myself, that's the end of Israel. And I said that to him. He said, no, no one in the Middle East is going to have borders. We're all going to be one. And I said, one what? What are we going to be one of? And he says, a trading bloc. A bloc.
Mm-hmm.
And Israel, and by the way, believe every word Shimon Peres has ever said about a world without borders, about hotels being better security than army bases. The whole business, Peres has been saying this from the beginning. He wrote a book of the New Middle East where he included himself as an Otto architect. It was a lie, of course. But the rest is true. He gives the whole structure of the new Middle East. You notice that Condoleezza Rice, CFR, of course, uses the word new Middle East now all the time. Well, when it counts, anyways. They are going to make us one happy trading bloc like the EU.
Mm-hmm.
That was the goal of Oslo. Now, how do I know? Because I interviewed one of the two negotiators of Oslo, and he knew everything. That was the purpose of Oslo. It was not for Israel to survive, it was for Israel to die. Now, why people don't understand this, you got me. But they don't. And every move Israel has made since then has determined that Israel will die. It's a country very, very close to its 1948 borders. Now, I'm going to talk about the two worst things ever done. One was getting out of the Lebanese security bloc. We kept Hezbollah away from our border. Well, that had to be finished. We could not have any allies in Lebanon either. They arrested the whole South Lebanese army and disbanded it. This is what Ehud Barak did. Now, do I have information on Barak. What a slimy, sleazeball of a murderer is Ehud Barak. Now, why somebody doesn't go to his house in Israel and hang him from the nearest oak tree, I don't know. Because he's the guy who pulled out of Lebanon, like on the first day he was the prime minister in the year 2000, and led to this war. Why is he allowed to be, and by the way, a prestigious former prime minister of Israel? He is causing the death. Right now, the number is only in the dozens of Israelis. It will be in the many hundreds, and then it will be in the many thousands. And there is no one outside his house with a rope and a noose. This is the country of Israel. The people who have set them up are now distinguished. Yossi Balin sits in cabinet meetings. Oh, and I'm running away, and I'm in the middle of America in 102 degree weather with no rain. You know, I guess that's my torture.
In Oklahoma, the boot, yeah.
What a desolate thing, 102 degrees every day. I've never seen Israel doesn't have a climate like this.
Well, that won't last forever. Then you get the you get the tornadoes in the springtime. And
looking forward to it, it'll cool us down.
Yeah. Well, you know what you said.
I've never been to Kansas.
But you kind of like the music.
Well, sure, what the heck.
But what you said is true even here. You see a reversal of what should be. You've got traitors who are being exalted and those who are trying to blow whistles who are demonized.
You will probably someday end up in a war. I don't think they really need that, though. You certainly have got a situation on the Mexican border, but who are you going to go to war against? You'll just become the world order slowly and peaceably. They're taking away people's money here. I've noticed that. That people work all their lives and expect the pensions and easy retirements. They find out that their company isn't going to offer them things like that, or they're fired outright. All kinds of stuff is happening in America, but it's more economic than anything else. Israel might disappear in a week or two.
Well, you know, our military is being used, I believe, to make the way straight for the NWO.
Well, and we don't need the American military. Do you know that Afghanistan no longer is controlled by the American military, that NATO came in?
Who took the place?
NATO. NATO has replaced the American military in Afghanistan.
Oh, funny how that doesn't get promoted.
Isn't that amazing? That happened during this war. I got news for you. Did you know that you now have a free trade agreement with Kuwait?
Well,
a week ago.
Well, let me just say something, because I got an email a while ago, and people who may not necessarily or have heard this for the first time or may not believe it, a gentleman out of Canada who's been outraged about what's happening here with the whole idea about erasing borders went taking a look around, and just like you said, there are over a dozen sites that you can consult to find out these trading blocks that are occurring. It's almost like the 10 regions that Club of Rome had laid out back in...
Of course it is.
Right.
You know, Oman, Bahrain, and Jordan are now one trading block? This all happened during this war. And nobody knows this is going on?
No, they don't. In fact, I ask people all the time, Barry. I mean, when you ask somebody out there who's been brainwashed by mainstream news, you ask them what's going on with the borders. They'll tell you, well, we're going to be putting National Guard down there. We're going to be building walls. But what they don't know what's going on are white papers by the CFR and their counterparts in Mexico and Canada that are talking about integrated economy, a North American bloc, no borders, NASCO corridor that nobody knows is going to be constructed in the United States.
Well,
so there you go.
Can help Canada. That place actually needs help. not so bad.
But, I mean, again, nobody knows it's happening here, so they're not going to know what's happening over here. But when I look at these links, I look at German-Arab Free Trade 2010, EU-Mediterranean Free Trade 2010, you know, and it goes on, you know, Europe-Africa Free Trade 2010.
And by the way, you're not looking at 2020 when all these blocks join and become one happy world.
There you go. There you go.
Well, that's what's happening in the Middle East. Israel will lose. Israel will have to accept foreign troops. The people will accept anything in another week. How much longer can they sleep under a barrage of rockets? I mean, really. You've got 2 million Israelis from Beit Shan all the way to the Lebanese border. Under nightly rocket attacks, they will come out with their hands in the air and accept anything. They're probably ready to do that now. I'm not there. I can't tell you. They're probably ready to do it right now, except all the foreign troops that will come in and bring them a night's sleep.
Well, but Barry, I mean, they're just getting started. I mean, you know how this is going to play, or you may have an idea how this is going to play in.
I think it's getting close to what they want. I think it's getting very close to what they want right now.
Well, I mean, and also you've got finally the false justification to get the United States involved with Iran, because now, you know...
Well, that's why you had an air war. Now, people ask me, you were in the Lebanon War, they say, why is this war different than the real war of 1982? Because there was no ground war. We didn't use the Air Force for anything back in 82, but paving the way for the ground war. Well, now what you've got is the Air Force being used to make Lebanon non-functional, which makes all Lebanese hate us, which is part of the plan as well, of course. And getting nowhere with Hezbollah. We have more rocks than ever before. We had to have a ground war from day one to catch them off guard and take out the rocks physically. But guess what? For how long is that going to last? Now we know that they have Katyushas that fly 100 miles. So they move them beyond Beirut. They move them beyond Tripoli. Maybe they'll use Syria. Maybe they'll even shoot from Iran. How long can Israel withstand a rocket war? And I've been screaming this long enough, not for very long. Now why, and here's the big question, doesn't Israel have rockets? Don't we have an arsenal of our own rockets? Why aren't we blasting Damascus to smithereens and they'll put a stop to Hezbollah? I mean, really, if you want to look at how to actually win the war, Israel has to take out its own rockets and fight back, I suppose, but guess what? You wait. That may happen yet.
Well, but I mean,
prediction. You asked me for a prediction.
But Barry, I mean, since we know wars are contrived, obviously this is going to a certain kind of script, which is calling for what it is. I mean, your leaders,
well,
our leader.
We had the air war. The United States cannot attack Iran in a ground war. Your troops are spread too thin. You don't have enough troops. All you've got is the best air force in the world, and that air force will you use against Iran. And listen, what they discovered is an air war does not help very much. It really doesn't do the trick.
No, it doesn't.
Okay, now this is what they discovered, but that's why you had a 2-week air war.
Well, we all know in the United States, we just know that no matter what, the United States is going to invade or incur Iran. I mean, everybody knows it. They can go on with all this theater.
Not the United States by itself.
Oh,
they're going to bring in the NATO troops of Afghanistan. They're going to spread this thing. The United States by itself doesn't have the manpower. And I'll tell you another thing. If you think NATO and the EU have the manpower, I don't think combined they're going to defeat Iran. What you will see is a lot of bombing, an awful lot of bombing. If you thought the Yugoslav war saw enough bombing, wait till you see when you take on a country twice the size of Texas, how much bombing you can do.
Well, I process all that's taking place out there through the prism of the book written by Brzezinski, another one of our CFR buddies.
You betcha.
In 97, who stated, and I think this was the wink and the nod to anybody who was paying attention, writing in 97, that the United States would be unwise to agitate an axis of Iran, China, and Russia. Now, why did he state that? And he did it more than once in the book, so it was like, do you really get it, guys? Now, I'm looking at this, and I'm saying to myself, you know, we're just seeing the beginning, and I think after...
Prophet, isn't he?
Yeah, I know. I know. Well, this is what we said. I mean, there's a script. They're covering it. He gave a little something away. No one was paying attention, really. But that's where we're going to go. So, yeah, I mean, will there be a draft here?
No.
Well, remember one thing. There's going to be another...
Vietnam again.
Well, we're already there.
That's not bad. You know, let's bring back the acid and the Grateful Dead. And not a bad idea. Go and get a draft.
Well, I'll tell you what. We went and ripped some audio from a documentary back in 1974 called Hearts and Minds. And it was timely to go look at that because of all that took place and the soldiers coming home blown apart and what they had to say about what occurred. And of course, it was prophetic in the sense that the past, it was prologue to what's going on now. And we went ahead and did it again because it's another generation to dupe.
I'm going to add something to that, please.
Sure.
This is not the 60s. This is the 40s going on.
You've
got a wall around the Jews. You have half the Jews of the world living in Israel right now. Half the Jews. Never forget that. There are 6 million Jews out of only 12 million left. There should be 40 or 50 million Jews, but they have been destroyed by the Sabbatean. A rocket war inside that wall would destroy them all. That wall is the Warsaw Ghetto Wall. You think that wall is to keep Arabs out? This is what the Arabs don't get. It's to keep the Jews in. A rocket war inside that wall can wipe out, again, half the world's Jews. And they're just sitting ducks for that. And by the way, the sitting ducks happen to be my children, my ex-wife,
right,
my sister, my nephew, my niece, all my neighbors, everyone I know. It's just heartbreaking. It's not the word for how I feel. I'm not merely heartbroken. It could have been prevented. None of it ever had to be. None of it. And here's another shock for you. Until 1987, for 20 years, the Arabs were kind of getting used to us, and we were kind of getting used to them. I was there in 1985-6. There was a lot of getting used to that had to be done, and we were actually doing it. You could walk in the old city of Jerusalem. You could go shopping. There was business being done. And then came Rabin. In 1987, we became defense minister, and then lo and behold, the Intifada broke out while he was in Washington. He did not return to put it down. He hired, and this is again, Barak, Shimon, and Mitzna. Now, I'm going to give Shimon a break and say he wasn't the worst, but Mitzna and Barak during the Lebanon War had to make sure that Begin didn't win that war. They sent 23, well, that's how many died. They sent a platoon of religious Jewish tanks straight into a Syrian ambush. 23 were dead before the battle was over. Barak picked up the microphone while the division commander Ben Gal was out on a jeep tour, and he looked at the map and sent them to their deaths. Barak is a filthy murderer, so is Mitzna, and Barak is the one who pulled out of Lebanon. All of this is to make sure that Israel will not survive. If only someone had listened to me, and I say that again. Barak is not a distinguished Jew. He is the worst soldier we ever had, but he became the most decorated. And I repeat a point I've made many times. I was in that army. Our best officers didn't advance. Our worst officers, the ones completely covered in scandal, were the ones that advanced. And then I understood why much, much later, why the IDF is not the greatest army in the world. They pushed the worst slime-ridden officers into the general staff of the nation because they're going to go into politics and they're going to be controlled because they are so dirty. Moshe Dayan was the dirtiest general we ever had. He's the one who cut the deal with Kissinger to give the Arabs 24 free hours without an Israeli call-up during the Yom Kippur War. He killed 3,000 Jews in one day. And of course, Jimmy Carter of the CFR forced Menachem Begin to take him on as foreign minister. I'm rewriting Israeli history in the only way it can be written. That's the only way you can tell the story of Moshe Dayan, what a truly awful human being and person he was, and the fact that Begin was forced by Jimmy Carter and his whole gang from the Trilateral Commission, including Brzezinski and Vance and Mondale, to take on Dayan, because when Camp David came around, Dayan would force Begin to change. Israeli history for the truth.
I'd like to pick it up when we get back together again on Monday, starting off with Carter, and then I'd like to really focus on the Vatican intrigues in Israel as well. So I'll tell you what, I thank you for the time that you've been with us. Barry, just give me the email that people can reach you at right now.
Okay. I'm going to use the simple ChamishBA@gmail.com. That's ChamishBA@gmail.com. And the site is the Barry Chamish website. Have a look at it. I'd be delighted to hear from you.
Okay, Barry. All right, good enough. I'm sorry, but I think you're going to get some emails. And again, like, we can pick this up Monday. There'll be more questions for you as well. Thank you for the time you spent with us, and I'll see you on the other end of the weekend. How's that?
You got it.
All right, thanks very much, brother.
See you then.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
My name, it is nothing. My age, it means less. The country I come from is a part of the free West. I was taught and brought up there, its laws to abide, and that the land that I live in has God on its side. Oh, the history books tell it. They tell it so well. The cavalry's charged, the Indians fell. The cavalry's charged, the Indians died. For the country was young, with God on its side. Oh, the First World War, it came and it went. The reason for fighting, I never could get. But I learned to accept it, accept it with pride. For you don't count the dead when God's on your side. And then the Second World War, it came to an end. We forgave the Germans, and now we are friends. Though they murdered 6 million, in the ovens they fried. The Germans now too have God on their side. But now we have weapons of chemical dust. And if by them we're forced to, why then by them we must. One push of the button and a shot the world wide. And you never ask questions when God's on your side. Though many a long hour I've thought on this, that Jesus Christ was betrayed by a kiss. But I can't think for you, you will have to decide whether Judas Iscariot had God on his side.